The all-new Inside Sources. Inside Sources. Your inside access to the people and policies shaping Utah's future. Here are Greg Skordas and Holly Richardson on KSL News Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Inside Sources. I'm Greg Skordas, and I'm alongside Marty Carpenter, partner of Northbound Strategy. And Marty asked me earlier why I don't use ChatGPT more, and it's because I have people like Marty Carpenter, who is the ChatGPT of Utah politics, who will be helping me out today. It's good
that
to be with
you. That just
means
I answer quickly and sometimes accurately. Yeah, Is that what you're trying to tell people?
Yeah, I have to check it out once in a while, but yeah.
Fair enough. That's probably a very good assessment.
We hosted last week, and I was reminded again at how attuned you are to everything we're doing in this state. So it was nice to work. And it's nice to have you back again.
Well, nice of you to say. I'm glad to be here.
Holly will be back next week. She took a two-week vacation. I'm taking Monday off because it's a court holiday. And I just got used to 43 years of court holidays. And Columbus Day, Indigenous Persons Day, is a holiday. And so I took it off. And KSL's like, wait a minute. It's not a holiday for us. So Holly's going to do the show with I don't know who she's doing it with.
But not me.
Maybe you. At any rate, if you recall the Tyler Robinson case, and of course everyone does, he's the individual accused of shooting and killing Charlie Kirk at Utah Valley University in September. He is currently being held in the Utah County Jail. He's charged with several counts, I think eight total, but the foremost count of that, of course, Marty, is aggravated murder. It's a death penalty case. And he's had two court appearances so far. And I actually appeared at the first one because I was there helping the county out. I don't represent him, and I'm not involved in the prosecution, and I'm not even involved in the case at all. But he hadn't been appointed counsel, so I was there at the first hearing. And he appeared via video, WebEx or Zoom, and he was wearing a vest that a lot of people couldn't figure out what it was. It was a suicide prevention vest.
Yeah.
And it was a sleeveless thing. It was kind of a bulky thing. I thought it was a bulletproof vest, but it's suicide prevention. Then his next hearing was after his attorney was appointed. This was about 2 weeks ago. She asked that he not even appear that day in any respect because it was just a pro forma, like, hey, let's just get a court date. Let's announce that the attorneys are on board.
Right.
And the judge jumped in and said, okay, I'm going to set dates for the state to disclose what's called discovery and whatnot. So he didn't have to appear. But his next hearing date is I think it's October 29th, and that's a date to decide if there's going to be a preliminary hearing. It will be shorter than this segment will be. I mean, it'll be a quick one. But his attorneys filed a motion I thought was fairly interesting that asks for two things. One, to allow him to appear at all proceedings in civilian attire, and two, to be without physical restraints during his in-person hearings, both pretrial and at trial. A little bit unusual. And I'll tell you why, because when we have defendants who appear at trial and there's a jury there, you would expect those exact things to occur so that the jury doesn't see somebody walking in front of them with cuffs or those goofy orange jumpsuits that they wear in the jail and that they appear. So our clients in criminal cases, even if they're in jail, we'll have them walk into the courtroom dressed like you and I are today, in whatever they're comfortable with.
Hopefully better than I am today. But well, more like.
But I mean, just whatever they're comfortable with so that they look like they're part of, they look like they're sort of like
right.
The jury.
Yeah.
This motion includes pretrial. In other words, when he's appearing before the judge, which is unusual because the judge knows he's in jail and has seen him in jail. And isn't deciding the case. You know what I mean?
Is that a matter of just looking down the road and trying to make sure you can seat a jury that's not going to have been, I don't know, biased in some way by that?
Exactly. That's what they're doing in this case. Because this case is being televised, you nailed it. They're saying, well, you know, appearing in his jail clothes is fine, but this case is, everything we've done in this case has been televised. The jury has... Our jury's going to have watched some part of it, and they may have seen him.
In that situation, doesn't the prosecution... I mean, it feels like they've got a lot going in their favor for what they're trying to do here. Wouldn't you, as the prosecution, almost argue, yeah, anything you can do to make sure that we don't get challenged on some technicality, you know, bring him in a tuxedo for all I care.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yes, you'd want to do that. The problem isn't the prosecution. It's not even really the judge. It's the jail. It's the sheriff. It's the safety issue, the security issue that they have to deal with. Because if you think about it, And Utah County is a little bit different than most counties in that, well, Salt Lake is the same way. The jail and the court are not in the same facility. If you go up to Davis or Wasatch or some of the other counties, Summit, the jail and the court are, I mean, you literally walk from one to the other. But in Utah County, the jail's in Spanish Fork and the court's in Provo. So it's a little bit of a schlep. They have to put them in a van. They drive them. They park and they bring them into the Sally Port underneath the courthouse and then walk them up. So it's a little bit of a public safety, a little bit of a security interest. So I think that the judge is going to defer a little bit to the county sheriff and say, is this something you're comfortable doing? Mm-hmm. Absolutely, they'll do it, like you said, at the trial. Absolutely, they'll do it at all phases of the trial when there's a jury there. But in front of the judge, it remains to be seen. But you said it exactly right. The state's going to say, we don't object, because who wants an appeal issue based on what clothes he wore? You know what I mean? And they also don't want him shackled. And so I've done cases where we have like gang members or really violent offenders, and you can't just walk them into the court like you and I are, unshackled. So what they'll often do is the defendant will come into the courtroom before the jury's in, and he will be seated at a table where there's an apron in front of the table, and his legs will be cuffed. So when the jury walks in, they'll see him like I'm looking at you, your upper body. His hands will be free. He'll be talking to me and writing or whatever. But his legs are cuffed, sometimes to the table itself, so they don't run or leave or do something.
So
this one doesn't say that, but usually they'll say that he not appear in visible cuffs, visible restraints. Do you know what I mean?
How much influence do courtroom optics really have on jurors in your experience?
A lot. I mean, I think it. I would never ever let a client appear in court in jail clothes. And you know, we.
And that goes probably beyond that, like clean shaven,
absolutely.
You know, hair combed or whatever.
I sometimes watch attorneys, and I watched one up in Idaho recently, where the attorney and the client sat about as far apart as they could during the trial, and it gave. That optic to me bothered me. I mean, when I'm in court, I know this will sound weird. Even if my client's charged with something horrible, even if it's like a offense against a child or something like that, I'll talk to them. I'll get close to them. I'll sort of, you know, even maybe put my arm around them while I'm talking to them. Like, I'm not afraid of this person. I like this person.
Yeah.
You're my friend. You're my whatever. I just, you try to make them as likable as you can. You try to make them as regular as you can. And because the jury is already thinking this is a bad person, the whole presumption of innocence is not necessarily
and people
real.
My age probably base all of their optics of court, I don't know, maybe on Law and Order or something like that, but I would say primarily from like the O.J. Simpson case.
Right.
And so I think of like he had four or five attorneys at any given time, but Johnny Cochran was like his his buddy, like on his hip, like, you know, someone who was not afraid of him.
Right.
And so I see what you're saying there as far as the optics.
If you're afraid of the client, the jury's going to be afraid of him as well. Well, that'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. The motion was filed just yesterday. I imagine the judge will probably grant at least part of it, maybe more. When we come back after the break, I'm going to need your help with this one. A top Republican proposed a vote to keep military members paid, but other Republican officials have swatted it down. We're going to have Deseret News congressional correspondent Cammie Mondo tell you what's going on with that next.